May it please the court.
You may proceed.
My name is Craig Ritchie, and again, I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Jared Archdeacon. I know that very few family law cases make its way to the Supreme Court. So on behalf of not only my client, but perhaps more importantly, all the family law practitioners and judges, I appreciate the consideration this court has given by taking this case on transfer. If the decision from the Western District had been allowed to stand on its own, it created quite a quagmire for attorneys and judges because it's clearly in conflict with the Southern District case. I believe that my esteemed colleague, Mr. Boggs, and I can agree on a few things. We can agree that the trial court clearly made an error in awarding retroactive maintenance, as the appellate, as the Western District held. I think we can probably also now agree that the case was not final until the final disposition in 2016, although throughout the trial process and throughout arguments in the Court of Appeals, they maintain that there somehow had been a final judgment earlier that we had no right to appeal because we hadn't gone through that appellate process. I think the Court of the Western District got that issue right as well. There cannot be a final judgment for purposes of appeal until all the property is divided. But it's at that point that we diverge, because what the Western District did was to create a quasi-temporary maintenance solution when no temporary maintenance had been pled, nor ever requested, nor ever denominated as such by the trial judge. The trial judge entered a first interlocutory judgment, then issued a second interlocutory judgment. Then I got involved in the case and immediately asked the court to reconsider and reopen the evidence. And he said my motions were untimely because everything was final. Well, that defies logic, because at the time of the final disposition, we were then operating on a new amended petition where the wife, for the very first time, sought a name change, which the court granted. The court also changed custody of the children without a motion to modify being filed, and modified child support without a motion to modify child support being filed, but instead prohibited me from arguing or from, in essence, relitigating the issue of maintenance. The Nardini Court in the Southern District has this issue correct. In Nardini 1, there's two Nardini cases. In the first Nardini case, it went up to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals sent it back. And they said, not all the property has been divided. It's not final. It's not appealable. And sent it back to the trial judge. That happens all the time. In Nardini, then the trial judge ordered maintenance, again, retroactive to the date of his first trial. Nardini, too, said you can't do that. Maintenance cannot be awarded until there's a final division of property, until all the issues are resolved. There's no temporary motion that's been filed. The judgment became final once and only at the time of the second trial.
I don't think the Court of Appeals disagreed with that here, but they basically said since it wasn't final and the court ordered maintenance from the time of its first judgment, that it treated it as a temporary maintenance.
It treated it, but again...
And that's inconsistent with Nardini, but tell me which is correct. Why one is correct?
It has to be... Pardon me, didn't mean to interrupt.
Sorry.
It has to be Nardini. And this case demonstrates exactly why. In this first, in our case, when it went to trial first time, and I was not involved in it at that point, the trial judge says, I'm going to pierce the corporate veil and treat these assets that are owned by subsidiary business ventures as property that Mr. Archdeacon can use and draw income from, et cetera. Okay? It didn't divide that property, but it treated it as though Mr. Archdeacon had the right to do that. By the time this thing came around, these people were bankrupt. They had nothing. We stipulated at the final hearing to the division of property, and there was no property left. My guy had been basically a sort of a real estate developer. He's really more of a excavation contractor, and he developed basically the Menards plot south of St. Joe. And that they were in the middle of that when the economy tanked, Walmart bailed on them, and he's left with this project that there's no way that he could afford. And in essence, the parties eventually went bankrupt. So by using the facts as they existed 2 years, you know, 2 years earlier, demonstrates you can't.
But opposing counsel could have moved for temporary maintenance during that period.
Yes.
And then you would use those facts during the period of trial.
As a matter of fact, what probably should have been the appropriate remedy, because there was a bankruptcy issue in here as well, is that at some point they could have pursued a motion for temporaries. And the court could have determined what, if any, maintenance should have been awarded on a temporary basis at that time, given those facts. But here's the practical difference.
Yes. I want to go back to that. But one of the things that's important is that there's no division of property at the time when temporary maintenance is awarded. So why couldn't we consider this as a temporary maintenance award when the interlocutory judgment was entered?
Because the trial court did. The trial court considered it as though he had divided the property, because he said, I'm piercing the corporate veil, and I'm going to find that husband has the ability to make $5,000 a month because he has all this property available to him. So even though
But you could consider that in a temporary hearing.
You could. Generally, a temporary maintenance hearing, what you're trying to do is preserve the status quo. You're trying to make sure that the mortgages are paid, and the car's paid, and there's health insurance and all that kind of stuff.
But it's proper to consider the assets at that time. I mean, you would make that argument on behalf of your client.
Yes.
But the Court of Appeals did was said, even though he said this will continue until she remarries or dies, so he didn't say it was temporary, that in effect they treated it as if he had made it temporary. Is that proper or improper?
That was clearly improper. Matter of fact, the cases, and I'll also tell you that the respondent did not even argue that, did not brief that issue. No one raised that issue, because they took a position all along that everything was final, which clearly is not the case. But the cases cited by the Western District don't stand for what the Western District even suggested. The case that they cite as sort of authority to do that, that was not the holding of the case at all. It was a case where the parties had agreed to a temporary maintenance award. Then the trial judge in the final hearing raised that amount up by $100 a month and tried to make it retroactive to the time of the temporary hearing. Okay, the Court of Appeals said, you can't do that. Because there was a temporary hearing, a temporary award, and the new maintenance amount can only be prospective. So the Western District, and I understand the desire to try to support trial judges' determinations, but that it's illogical, and it certainly is not consistent with the holding of that particular case.
You've got a number of other issues which the Court of Appeals basically deferred to the trial court's determination of the facts, that the trial court could have not believed your client because opposing counsel argued your client had hid cash and therefore lost credibility on the other grounds.
Here's what I would say to that. First of all, I understand that there's a different burden here on that issue, and we give judges the right to we defer to the trial judges for credibility and those sort of things. But at the hearing that we had, at the final hearing, which would have been the only hearing really to determine maintenance, I would suggest, the wife testified that all of her needs are met, except $500. Occasionally she has to borrow $500 from her dad, I believe, to pay her rent payment. And the trial judge awarded $1,500 a month.
Well, there was also other evidence, right, that she needed $1,600, I think.
There was an income and expense statement that included all the child support expenses. That, again, there's case law that's clear on that. You don't include that in maintenance. But, again, what really happened was the trial judge had made his determination. He wasn't really going to treat this as a motion to reopen the evidence. He said that even if he had, the husband's income had not changed, and I'll give it to you that perhaps you could say that based upon credibility, okay? But still, you had the wife's affirmative testimony. I have all my needs met except $500, which I sometimes have to borrow from my dad. And again, the whole facts had changed by that time. We changed the custodial arrangement. The children were with my client the bulk of the time. My client's getting child support from the mother. And it's being offset by the maintenance award. But if you follow the logic of the Western District, you wouldn't even have an opportunity to appeal that issue. If that was truly a temporary maintenance determination, although it had never been pled, you don't have the right to challenge that for years, potentially years.
But that's the problem with this case. I mean, the parties were in bankruptcy, so they had to wait until the bankruptcy was completed until the case was resolved. So, I mean, in this situation, hypothetically, I know you disagree with this, if she needed that money during this 3-4 year period while the bankruptcy is going on, then you've got to be able to award temporary at the very least in that period of time.
I would respectfully suggest that if that had been the case, learned counsel, who's very experienced, would have filed a motion for temporary maintenance.
But they got maintenance, though. That's the result. Why did they need to do it after they got the maintenance award and the interlocutory judgment versus an order?
Again, Nardini in those cases say that you can't, that that's inappropriate. And for example, in Nardini, the parties had thought that they had divided everything. They had one hearing, the maintenance, everything. They thought everything was over until they discovered some property was not divided. And the Nardini court said, you can't go back to even that first trial. You can't award maintenance until that last trial.
And when did the court here order the retrospective maintenance, what he called?
The retroactive maintenance. The trial judge awarded it back to the time of...
Yes, service. When did he enter that order?
In 2014, 2013 or 2014.
While the case was on appeal or after remanded, but you're waiting on the bankruptcy, he purported to enter a final judgment.
Well, the parties had dismissed the bankruptcy by that point.
Judge Powell's point is that assuming you're right that that's what you normally would do, why would you move for temporary maintenance if you've been awarded permanent maintenance? I mean, the court's error in that regard misled them into thinking it was already getting maintenance. You don't get double.
But are you talking about the Nardini case or my
case? I'm talking about your case. Well, if there were 2 years between that entry of prior to 2014, apparently there was no judgment for maintenance or retroactive maintenance.
There was. The judgment in 2014.
That was the first time the court ordered retroactive maintenance. So up to that point, counsel might have, if they thought they needed temporary maintenance, could have filed a motion for temporary maintenance.
Could have filed it at
after that point, why would counsel have done that? Because he already had an award of maintenance. So would have been futile to ask for temporary maintenance, right?
And I realize I've gone way past my time, if I may respond. Again, I think the appropriate thing to have done when the trial judge, he kind of sat on the judgment for about 3 months before he ordered it. Mm-hmm. And that's when, the very first time there was a bankruptcy filing. But at that time, probably what should have happened is there should have been a recognition that we have to do something different. And now, Mr. Boggs, if you'll follow your motion for temporaries, we can take this up in a temporary fashion.
I'm not saying what the trial court should have done, but once the court entered that purportedly final judgment, that then he, 2 years later, entered a different judgment.
Yeah.
During that 2 year period, he'd already ordered maintenance.
He'd already ordered maintenance.
So what was Mr. Boggs to have done at that point?
I guess to rely upon the Western District, in my opinion, getting the case wrong. Again, as I presented to the trial judge, we have clear precedent on this. Nardini is clear. What? I mean, if the court's going to overrule it, if the Supreme Court's going to overrule it, it's going to have to overrule Nardini and all the cases that follow and say that we're creating new law and we're going to follow the suggestions of the Western District and we're going to create this quasi-temporary relief under this fact pattern.
The maintenance that was ordered, maintenance requires... the trial court was required in entering an award of maintenance to consider the property division.
Yes.
So the statutory scheme requires the property to be divided because that's a consideration in entering the final order.
That's one of the statutory factors. And again, that was my argument to the trial judge. Judge, you don't have a final order here. You haven't divided the property. How can you assess maintenance against my client under the supposition that he has use of this property that no longer exists? And again, everyone conceded at the end, this property was no longer in existence. Again, unfortunately, these people were caught up in the economic downturn, but we were stuck with a judgment, and even the judgment that was entered was based upon evidence 3 years earlier, financial statements 3 years earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Boggs. May it please the court.
Please proceed.
My privilege to be here this morning. I have 3 points that I'd like to make on behalf of Sybil Archdeacon. And my first point, I'd like to address what, from my viewpoint, the 3 errors that occurred in this case. The first one was mine in not filing a motion for temporary maintenance. And that error by me is not reviewable by this court. The second error that occurred in this court, in this case, pardon me, was error by the trial court in doing what I asked on behalf of Sybil Archdeacon that he do. The third allegation of error I suggest in this court is Mr. Ritchie's, in that I believe he's failed to comply in seeking appellate review here with Rule 7807, which says that if you want to complain about Judge Kellogg's final decision, in which he made a finding of maintenance, had made a finding that the initial interlocutory judgment of maintenance would continue unmodified, including language therein about retroactive maintenance, he had an obligation in preserving error under Rule 7807C to say to the trial court in a post-trial motion, you made a mistake, and here's why you made it. I'm going to suggest to this court that step was important because decisions made during the trial are made during the heat of battle. And while Judge Kellogg's decision to award retroactive maintenance or to affirm the prior interlocutory judgment may have been error, the purpose of Rule 7807 is to say when we have a more deliberative moment, a time to slow down and think about what we've just done.
Was a motion for new trial filed here? Or
no,
a motion?
None. It went directly to the Court of Appeals. There was no effort made by the appellant to give the trial court an opportunity to review it, and I suggest that error under Rule 7807 is fatal. My second argument is that I think Judge Welch came up with a good remedy in a unique case. My partners in early practice of law, Don Witt and Abe Schaefer, taught me that in hard cases sometimes come difficult decisions. This case, the factual presentation of this case is extremely unique. Lord knows how many thousands of years would ever pass by before facts like this ever came before a court again.
You make no argument in your brief in support of treating it as a motion for temporary maintenance, though, or as an order for temporary maintenance. That was fashioned by the Court of Appeals on its own, it appears.
Yes, although I do believe it was requested at the time of trial. Trial counsel back in 2014 was different than Mr. Ritchie, and I think the transcript will reveal no objection was made. Not that I'm suggesting an objection.
You, in 2014, you filed a motion for temporary
maintenance? No. Maintenance was requested at the time of trial in its finality.
And yeah, I believe but a motion for temporary maintenance.
No motion for temporary maintenance was ever filed. Yeah. That is correct, although I would disagree it was not in our petition. The petition found at legal file page 22 will reveal that there was a prayer for maintenance retroactive to the time of service. And I'm not suggesting to this court that that's an adequate method to seek temporary maintenance.
Because we have said you don't get retroactive maintenance, but you can seek temporary maintenance.
Correct. Okay.
So here are you defending the award of temporary maintenance, or are you saying that issue was not preserved?
I'm saying it was not preserved, and even if it was, I think Judge Welch got it right.
And how do we square that with Nardini?
Because I think Mr. Ritchie, in advocating the Nardini case, misses the point of what Nardini says. I think the Nardini case, its purpose is to talk about finality for purposes of appeal, not whether or not a trial court can grant maintenance without also, at the same time, simultaneously deciding elements. In that
without case, simultaneously what?
Deciding maintenance simultaneously. And while I would agree the statute required the trial court consider the financial resources of the parties, including his property, it's not mandatory that the court actually divide that property at the same time.
Well, but he's not saying they have to do that to award temporary maintenance. He's saying you never asked for temporary maintenance. The court purported to do a final determination of maintenance, and he can't do that without the property division.
Well, and that was going, and that might, if I may segue and then my third point to make that point and also answer your question. I think, in all due respect to Judge Welch, I think he got it wrong. And I think he got it wrong in that I suggested this court rule 7401 and its ability to give to a trial court in a unique situation the opportunity to say, while as a general rule, the trial court should decide all issues, make everything final for purposes of appeal, there can't be unique circumstances as existed here where it's in the interest of justice for a trial court to say, I'm going to take advantage of Rule 7401 and I'm going to say that certain elements of my decision shall be final today for purposes of appeal. But as the trial court said, property here is tabled. And it's going to be tabled not because Mr. Archdeacon took bankruptcy. It's being tabled because one of his three entities was taking Chapter 11 bankruptcy for an indeterminate period of time. And those three entities were added as parties. Excuse me, I apologize. Because virtually all of the assets of these parties were titled in the name of entities. Their groceries were purchased with corporate checks. The children's toys were purchased with corporate checks. They had no personal checking account. And so when after the case was tried and the case was sub judice, one of the entities took Chapter 11. I think Judge Kellogg quite properly said, this is the type of case, divorce case, for Rule 7401 was destined for. I'm going to go ahead and declare, although it took him two times to do it correctly, I'm going to declare the decision of this court for a divorce, for parenting time, for child support, for maintenance is being decided, and it's being decided, and it is final. And while the court may have to consider the assets of the parties, I think it's incorrect to say that the trial court must divide the assets for a final judgment for maintenance to take place. And while I'm not encouraging the use of 7401 to be a rule used in all cases or as a general rule, I think that this court is important that you give to the trial court the opportunity to use it as a tool. Otherwise, what happens? People just can't get divorced. And I might add, that concept is somewhat supported by this court's doctrine of divisible divorce. And I realize that cases where there's a lack of in personam jurisdiction or there's only quasi in rem jurisdiction, maybe a little bit of a leap logically on my part. But the point is that in those cases where there's a lack of in personam jurisdiction, this court can grant a divorce, can grant custody of children. This court can divide property, at least to the extent that it exists within this jurisdiction, without even having personam jurisdiction over the respondent. To suggest that somehow, as Mr. Ritchie would argue, that and as Judge Welch suggested, that means that there's nothing final until a future date. I can't advocate that as what's in the best interest of the body of law of the state. Otherwise, people cannot be married. Yes, Judge.
I wanted you to make sure you address opposing counsel's argument that there was no evidence she needed the maintenance, that she said she just needed $500 a month here and there.
I totally disagree with that.
And can you tell me what in the record you rely on?
There was an income and expense statement, and as the record will reflect, in the first trial, there was no child support or financial assistance from the father at all to support her for support or maintenance. And the amount of maintenance awarded by the trial court was within the evidentiary bounds of this case.
And he says some things were included in the income and expense statement that are not appropriate to consider for maintenance. Was there other evidence of needs that she presented?
The income and expense statement is mandated by local rule, and it mandates what questions must be answered. Okay. It requires that the proponent or the affiant of the income and expense statement put down all of their expenses, and there's no differentiation in that form for the income and expense statement was in compliance with local rule. It set forth all of my client's financial needs, and it was relevant evidence for this court, for the trial court.
Did she say she didn't need any more money and didn't need
maintenance?
Absolutely
not.
What did she say?
She said she was in need of maintenance, and I do not recall the exact amount that was requested by her at trial, but to suggest that the evidence conclusively established that her financial needs were only $500 a month, I believe, is not supported by the record.
Thank
That's
you.
All I have, unless there are questions.
If I may address the last question first, I can point exactly in the transcript. It was the transcript on page 62, lines 19 through 21, where she testified that all of her needs were met except for $500 a month, which she occasionally borrowed from her.
The trial court can believe all part or none of any witness's testimony. So even if she said that, if there's other evidence in the record, the trial court's judgment would be supported by the evidence.
I would suggest that the trial court has to believe somebody. I mean, if the trial court's not believing my client and then refuses to believe her own request, then he turns only to the income and expense statement, which ironically, the needs for the children in the income and expense statement are nearly dollar for dollar of the maintenance award. I would also suggest that this was not a case where in the heat of battle the court made some decision. This original interlocutory judgment was July of 2013. There was a first amended interlocutory judgment, and there was a second amended interlocutory judgment. Then in June of 2015, I filed a motion to reconsider and terminate the maintenance. I addressed it with the court at that time. The trial judge...
Were you required to file a motion for a new trial in this circumstance?
I don't believe so under these circumstances. There are certain things that we've been given guidance on. For example, the statutory factors for child custody.
In a normal civil case, you raise things in a motion for a new trial, but the procedure here is...
It would have been the third time that I addressed that with a trial judge. I addressed it in a motion to reconsider. I addressed it numerous times in pretrials. I addressed it in my pleadings to reopen the evidence that we ultimately kind of heard. So all of those things.
Is there something different in family law that doesn't require, though, the motion for new trial to be filed?
Motion for new trial is only when there's a jury trial. Is that correct?
So there was nothing that required you to do it here.
So.
That's what I'm trying to
get. We do have guidance from the appellate courts that on some issues, for example, where the trial judges don't make specific
failure to make required findings.
Statute. Then we have to give them the chance to correct the error. So Mr. Boss would have you believe.
If you don't, like you didn't in this case, the remedy or the result is that all facts are found in accordance with the judgment entered.
Assuming that's true, as a matter of law, this thing has, in my opinion, has to be reversed. We have to follow Nardini. And Mr. Boggs, I think, would concede that I was telling the trial judge that all along. You have clear precedent directly on point on that. Mm-hmm. And he disagreed. Mr. Boggs disagreed. Apparently, the appellate judge disagreed. But it's completely square on all points that the award of maintenance retroactive to this time of hearing was inappropriate. Thank you.